Chapter 7. Rodina Station was a lot smaller than Anchor Point, and so was its population. Unlike Anchor Point's, however, it was permanent. The Government Council were proud of Rodina Station as a genuine home to its progressive persons, not a gold farm that made fat capitalists fatter. There were no ugly corporate logos defacing bulkheads or clothing. Everything on Rodina was homegrown and homemade, developed by the people for the people, to use at no cost beyond necessary contributions toward upkeep. Occasionally, there were rumors that some of the progressive peoples wouldn't have minded a little commercialization if it meant getting up-to-date tech that much sooner. But the council knew these so-called rumors were planted by capitalist agents attempting to sow dissension, hoping to get their foot in the door. Progressive peoples were too smart to fall for such tricks. Let those bastards in, and the next thing you knew, you were under new management with corporate logos tattooed on your ass. Any fools who felt enslavement to commercial interests was worth getting faster delivery on video screens with resolution 0.5% higher than last year's model were free to leave and sell their souls. Of course, they wouldn't have time to watch their fancy new screens because they'd be working 16 hours a day just to make rent on a single windowless room, air not included. It never was with capitalists. Pretty soon they'd have to choose between breathing and eating, with both bills past due. Fortunately, progressive peoples were too intelligent, too enlightened, and too ideologically informed to be seduced by the superficial gloss of consumerism. They knew things didn't have to be shiny to perform properly, and even if something wasn't the absolute latest, it still worked. Take the cybernetics lab, for example. Chrome and designer labels had nothing to do with function. Rodina's computers were maybe a hundredth of a second slower than the ones at Anchor Point, but they got the job done with the same accuracy and precision. Most humans couldn't perceive even a 50th of a second, so what was the big goddamn deal anyway? The matter of capitalist accomplishments loomed especially large in the mind of Colonel Dr. Timur Suslov. At the moment, he was studying the upper half of the robot recovered from the spacecraft that had violated UPP space. It hung in a stereotactic frame, while the station's best, quickest, and most precise data-gathering system sucked out every bit of its information it had, without erasing it or leaving any sign it had been touched, even in its raw activity log. There were whispers that this marvelous software had been pirated from Anchor Point on a flyby, then customized to burn off all traces of its origin. A serious charge, but Suslov was less interested in gossip than he was with results. What really fascinated him, however, was the insane amount of effort the capitalists put into making robots look like people. Uncanny Valley be damned. This one was quite exceptional. The most human-like he had ever seen, even with its mouth twitching every few seconds, probably a software incompatibility. Suslov had always believed none of the capitalists' talking dolls could fool him. No matter how well-rendered they were, they inevitably gave themselves away because they couldn't smile, not the way real people did. They couldn't laugh convincingly either. But more than anything else, it was facial lines, which was to say there weren't enough of them. Human faces moved in concert with their thoughts, even when they were alone, but robot faces never did. Consequently, their synthetic skin, while virtually identical to the real thing, never developed character lines, which gave them a dispassionate, even aloof appearance. It reminded him of those silly capitalist celebrities who paid for poison injections to paralyze their facial muscles, preventing wrinkles by making their faces more robot-like. Robots were made to look like people, while people made themselves look like robots. The Valley didn't get more uncanny than that. This robot was different. It had more facial lines than other robots he'd seen. Maybe some overfunded capitalist lab had programmed it to practice expressions in a mirror. That sounded pretty silly, but capitalists were silly. Most people Suslov knew didn't care, but he did. Not being able to tell the difference between a robot and a person was a secret fear he didn't actually want to admit to, even to himself. Nor did he want to admit that the only thing he was more afraid of was war against machines indistinguishable from humans. Maybe that war had already started, he thought suddenly. The war to end all wars. The one between people and machines passing for people. It had been coming ever since the damned capitalists made the preposterous claim that their machines were smart. They'd slid willingly down the slippery slope, merrily calling robots artificial persons that possessed artificial intelligence, giving them human names and treating them like citizens while they treated real people worse than animals. That was capitalist society in a nutshell, upside down and backward. At least this robot was useful, not to mention valuable. The information streaming from it was as rich as anything they'd pulled out of the Sulaco's memory banks, and it was all thanks to human beings, Suslov thought, turning to Lakai. Lucky, everyone called her, and she certainly had been. Another big difference between humans and their human-looking robots. There were plenty of things machines could do better than humans, but only humans could be lucky. Losing Boris had been very bad luck indeed, but the robot was an unprecedented windfall, and that counted as more good luck than bad. The diagram Lucky was currently watching take shape on the lab's largest high-res monitor looked like a partially deflated balloon, with a snake-like tail and a cluster of two long fingers on either side. When the diagram was complete, she nodded emphatically. "Dung," she said. "Yes." Meaning this was the creature that had killed Boris. Suslov was glad he hadn't seen it himself. She tapped the print symbol on the bottom right corner of the screen, then looked at Suslov again to see if he had any objections to her using up paper for a hard copy printout. He didn't. The finished diagram vanished and a new one began to appear, something far more complex. Suslov stood beside Lucky in silence, sneaking glances at her now and then. She rubbed her left arm, absently touching this or that tattoo. These were personal, he knew. Good luck symbols, lotus flowers, a village flag. The tattoos on her right arm were regimental, the standard symbol indicating she was a commando, hash marks showing her rank, 5 ideograms she had received for exceptional service or bravery, and on the inside of her forearm, her UPP identity barcode. As the new diagram on the screen filled in with more details, Suslov could see that it was the front and side views of a creature even stranger than the previous one. They seemed to be related, although he wasn't sure how. Larval stage and adult form, maybe? If so, he couldn't imagine how the transition occurred. He paused the screen before it finished rendering.
Kiniti so? Bo an koninti shing vatnikum? He asked her. What about this? Did you see this creature?
Lakai shook her head.
Kung.
No. He tapped the resume icon. She and Ashok had been damned lucky not to have seen that organism. Unlike machines, he thought, turning to look at the robot hanging in the stereotactic frame, machines had no luck at all. The corner of the robot's mouth was still going twitch, twitch, twitch as data continued pouring into the feeder cable attached to the base of its skull. According to the readout on the frame, they had accessed barely half the content in its machine brain.
Damn it! How could such a decadent, corrupt society produce such excellent compression algorithms?
When the computer techs saw this, they might defect en masse. His gaze went from the robot's fake face to the ragged end of its torso and all the exposed cables and tubes. With so much of its body missing, part of the robot's nervous system was dormant, while the rest supported its brain function, or tried to. It was hooked up to an auxiliary system that worked just as well as any flashy, overchromed capitalist model at keeping its blood purified and circulating. According to the readouts, the robot's neural net and cognition were well within optimal parameters. If there was any damage in the area, it had happened before Rodina's brave commandos had recovered the robot. Who knew what the alien growth might have done to it after its body had been ripped in two? Suslov turned back to the high-res screen, thinking again how extremely lucky the commandos had been not to have met the creature strong enough to do such a thing. The problem with good luck, however, was that it never lasted quite long enough. Plus, it was inevitably followed by bad luck. The universe always balanced the scales. The last thought replayed in his mind, and he shook his head. That was complete foolishness, not worthy of a colonel doctor in the UPP who lived solidly in the real world. He knew better than to indulge in superstitious dread like some downtrodden refugee fresh off a lifeboat.